This time on Weather Brains, James Spann looks at Alabama's fall weather pattern.
You don't like the weather? Wait a few minutes, it'll change.
Plus, James shares his thoughts on the approaching month's weather.
I just have a funny feeling November might be pretty active.
Not everybody uses fancy remote weather monitoring equipment.
Am I the only geek that has to go outside to measure the rain?
Also, a Weather Brains extra, dust in the wind. Does African dust affect the hurricanes we deal with here in the U.S.?
When you actually have this dust layer over the Atlantic Ocean, these storms don't really form and they end up being essentially capped.
We'll talk about that with University of Wisconsin researcher Amato Evan. And is it over for the Atlantic hurricane season?
I don't think we could have taken another year like we've had the last 2 years in our economy in, these coastal locations.
Plus, what television and radio used to be like.
I played vinyl records.
Is it true that James used to take a drive every day to get the satellite pictures he used on TV?
You know, if I drove down there at, say, 4 o'clock, I could get a satellite picture that was, 1 hour old.
That and more coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the netcast that's all about the weather, produced by the weather geeks from The Weather Company in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm one of those weather geeks, David Black, along with James Spann, lead meteorologist from ABC 3340 Birmingham. Hello, James. Are you staying dry this wet start of the week?
Man, I just want to go out there and run around in the rain. This is great. I'm excited. I love rainy nights.
I do, too. No complaints whatsoever. Glad to have it. Glad to have J.B. Elliott with us as well, and Bill Murray. J.B., how are you?
I'm fine, sir. I'm also a rainmonger.
Well, tell me about your rain situation. You live out there in Trussville, Alabama.
I have exactly the same amount as Bill Murray, 3,300 so far. Just a steady light rain.
Interesting coincidence. Bill Murray, I heard a rumor. Now, I confirm this, but I heard a rumor that you're actually with us this time from your home, and I don't think that could be true. You're probably in Bighorn, Montana or somewhere.
No, when I saw this rain and cool temperatures and wind, I knew I had to stay in Birmingham today. David, this is my kind of weather.
I think everybody's enjoying it. We can use the rain, and it's just a nice change from being dry all the time. So, James, tell me weather-wise, in a nutshell, what the coming week looks like. Are we going to maybe have more prospects for some additional rain?
I think the big word is changeable, David. This is getting in deep into the fall season, and if you don't like the weather, wait a few minutes, it'll change. It's the old saying, but it's going to work this week. We'll have this soaking rain tonight, and we'll watch the southern half of the state for severe weather. There's a tornado watch down there as we're doing this update. And tomorrow the rain ends. Wednesday it's going to be like summer. We'll be up in the 80s. Cold front comes in Thursday, maybe a shower storm with that, and then cool air Friday and Saturday. Another front Sunday with a chance of rain and more cool air early next week. So it's
it's
a fun time of the year because, for 3 months we say partly sunny, hot, and humid. A few spots could see an afternoon thunderstorm, in June, July, and August. So it's great getting back into the good dynamic weather that represents the cool weather season here.
Yeah,
so,
this is yo-yo weather.
Yeah,
up and down.
The challenge is no longer how do you say the same thing every day, but just keeping track of all the changes that are happening every, 2-3 days, it seems like now.
Yeah, and, generally speaking, we're fairly good at this. The problem involves timing. That's the big issue. You get a few days out, your timing can be off, but generally speaking, with modern forecast techniques and computer modeling, you got a pretty good grasp on the general idea what's going to happen for the next 7 days. It's just a matter of timing issues, which can always be a problem when it's a fast-moving pattern like this.
Well, we're going to enjoy it. Now, I guess the downside is we have to watch out for the possibility of severe weather creeping our way as time goes on. And the severe weather threat's been a little bit higher down, it seems like, to the south of us in South Alabama for the first part of the week anyway.
Yeah, I think, of course, we're doing this on Monday night. And as we watch all this stuff unfold, they're in the warm sector down in South Mississippi and Southwest Alabama. The dew points are really high and the air is unstable down there. So, and it's going to be hard to displace this rain-cooled air. I've learned that over the years. A lot of times warm fronts can kind of have a hard time getting past Birmingham when it's cool and rainy like this. So it'll be interesting to watch the weather tonight. But I just have a funny feeling November might be pretty active at the way we're looking at the latter part of October here once we get into the core of our fall tornado season. So We'll see if we shake and bake next month.
Okay. One of the other guys who writes forecasts with you, as well as J.B. Elliott, is Bill Murray. Bill, I just want to know, what's your life like? Have you been on the road? Because we've talked to you in the past, and sometimes you were all over all kinds of parts of the country.
Well, I've kind of been home for the last 2 weeks, David, so that's been nice. I went to Toronto 2 weeks ago, and they were all excited about the prospects of snow, and then, boy, we had that dumping on Buffalo last week off
wow.
Lake Erie. That was an incredible
amazing.
Two-day snow event there with nearly 24 inches in some places, so that was pretty incredible.
I wonder about you sometimes, how you stay prepared for all the different weather extremes that you face when you travel the country. You may leave the warm, sunny south, and you might be heading into some place that's got snow on the ground, so I guess you have to have all kinds of clothing in your ready-to-go suitcase.
Yeah, you really start looking at the forecast, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks out to kind of guess what the weather's going to be like. You know, we're going to New York in a few weeks, and that'll be a big trip. So as we get closer, it'll be time to start looking at those models way on out there.
New York. Is this going to be the Weather Brains on the road that James takes us on? Is that that trip, or is that something?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm confused.
Murray's going to some baseball game. You know, he always talks about these business trips. He always writes that he's going to some baseball game. I mean, he travels the country going to baseball stadiums. What a
great
job.
You call it a busman's holiday, James, you know, and you get to go and work and you get to have a little fun. So we found ourselves on the front row at Jacobs Field about 3 or 4 weeks ago for an Indians game.
That's those Bob Uecker seats, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the
great.
Front row.
And then tonight I was all set to watch baseball while we did Weather Brains, and then the rain claimed the fifth game of the NLCS in St. Louis. It's been raining all day there and not going to end until after midnight tonight. So it fell victim to the same system that we're dealing with, just the backside of it.
Very good. Sounds like you really do get to see the country. You've got tremendous... I think what we need to see here, happen here, is JB writes his book, Scatterbrains and Scattered Showers. And JB, I assume that you're progressing well on that. And then we need to have Bill Murray write his travels across the country, or maybe you guys can combine the books or something.
Yeah, recently my favorite trip's been to Park City, Utah. Hey, that's just such a beautiful place. We just... got an assignment out there, and it's going to be fun to go out there come January and February.
I can carry your bags out there if you want or something, you know. All right. One thing that I've been kind of curious about, and this is something we're not really hearing much talk about in the weather at this point because it's gotten kind of quiet, is the hurricane season. There's just not – we had a possibility of something developing, James, a while back, but it didn't really go anywhere. And what's the situation with the tropics right now? Is there anything happening at all?
I think most folks in the scientific community have just kind of started to write off the rest of the season. I forget when Bill Gray came out with his update. I think it was about the time we recorded the show last week.
Right.
But I tell you what, David, you look at these winds, the westerlies are getting so far south that I don't know. It's going to be tough. You know, there's always a chance you can have a late season system. Really, the area to watch will be around the Yucatan and the Bay of Campeche and in the far western Caribbean. Sometimes homegrown systems can develop down there and try and move up towards the Gulf to the northeast. So that'll be the spot to watch. But I think in terms of the long track Cape Verde type systems that can become so dangerous, prospects are beginning to fade. But JB's the only guy that knows about this stuff, and he won't tell us.
No, I don't know anything. I do know that this system that's affecting us tonight could have been a homegrown tropical situation if it had not moved in so quick.
Well, let me ask you guys this. There were folks saying, well, what a bust. It was a totally non-event season. And we really had a lot of activity out in the Atlantic. And I remember Dr. William Gray saying early on he thought there would be a lot of activity in the Atlantic. So do you guys consider it a bust? I'm not sure that that's a fair label.
Well, I tell you, we'll take it, David, even if it is a bust. When I was down in Miami in July and, you know, got to see Max Mayfield at the National Hurricane Center, he was feeling some of that, some of that criticism of his team, because I think we'd only had 3 or 4 storms by then, and now we've only had 9. And he said, but, you know, boy, if I ever had to bust a weather forecast, this is one to bust right here. And, I think we'll just enjoy it, because I don't think we could have taken another year like we've had the last 2 years in our economy and, you know, these coastal locations.
Based on his amended forecast at midway through the season, didn't it turn out just about correct on that part? Not as many as his original forecast last fall and early in the season, but his downscale forecasted midseason. I think that turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've had 9 named storms so far and 5 hurricanes, which is just below the long-term average, I think, of 10 and 6. And so, you know, we'll probably have a couple more before the season's over. And I think you're right, JB. I think we're going to be right on his number when it all ends.
That's an amazing thing to predict. I still am just in awe that somebody like Dr. Gray can come out and make a prediction and have it so close. And I wouldn't expect it to be on the money, but he has really seemed to have some skills amassed over his many years at doing that. And I just, every time we talk to some of these hurricane people, and to you guys too, to JB and James and Bill, I always get these new reminders about how tough it is to call development of storms and figure out what's going to form or what's likely to happen. And speaking of tropical storms, you've got it in your house, and you spend a lot of time trying to get rid of it. Dust is generally not a welcome part of our lives, but dust from the Saharan Desert is getting a very close-up look by meteorologists anxious to learn more about how it affects hurricanes in the Atlantic. In a WeatherBrains Extra, Dust in the Wind, new compelling evidence suggesting that Saharan dust does play a role in the development of tropical cyclones. Amato Evan is a researcher with the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He and a team of associates have just published their findings from looking at 25 years of satellite data. Mr. Evan, we hear about things like sea surface temperatures being relied on a lot in hurricane forecasting. You've got some interesting new theories, though, about other things to consider.
Right. I mean, definitely the sea surface temperature has been one aspect of what controls the intensity of a hurricane, that, or just even the genesis at all of a tropical cyclone, that people have really been focusing on. But this research kind of tries to bring in a new angle, and it builds upon some earlier observations that were made by two of the co-authors, Chris Felden and Jason Dunyon, where they thought they saw a relationship between, you know, these large dust plumes and the air mass that they were contained in, which we refer to as the Saharan air layer, and just kind of the intensity of hurricanes. And so what we were able to do was go back in time using satellite data and look at every year and see how much dust was actually over the North Atlantic, what was the intensity of dust, and what did we see with hurricanes, how intense were they, what kind of numbers were we seeing. And basically, over this time period, we saw that every year that we had, you know, an increase in dust activity, we didn't see as many tropical cyclones, and the ones that we saw weren't quite as intense. But then in years where we had a decrease in dust activity, we saw more vigorous tropical cyclones occurring. And so it's really kind of sparked our curiosity to see, well, how important really is, you know, dust and these large air masses, the Saharan air layer, how key is that? And how important is it relative to other traditional factors like El Nino and sea surface temperature?
Now, researchers have known about this dust for a long time, many years, but is your research really the first to establish perhaps a more conclusive link between Saharan dust and tropical cyclones?
Well, this is certainly the first study that's actually been able to go back in time and kind of do what we refer to as a satellite climatology. Usually you think of a climatology as being many years, but, you know, the satellite data that we have that is we can trust, that we can use, really goes back about 25 years. And so this was the first time that anyone had gone back and looked, and there had definitely been a lot of speculation, and like I said, a few case studies, but this was the first time that we were able to go back and look in time and really see on a year-to-year basis, does dust play any kind of role in what's happening with hurricanes and just tropical cyclones in the Atlantic?
So what I'm sensing here is we've known about dust for a long time, but you never really understood the possible correlation until we had satellite technology.
Absolutely, absolutely. And really, you really don't see, as far as in scientific literature, you really don't see a lot of studies about dust storms until satellites, because just we really didn't have the ability to see how expansive they are. I mean, a given dust storm, a particularly strong one, can literally stretch across most of the Atlantic Ocean. And we just really had no way of measuring that, no way of knowing that until satellites, until we could actually look from space.
So dust coming off the Saharan Desert actually makes it all the way across the Atlantic?
Absolutely. They've detected dust in the rainforest in Brazil. And in fact, you can have very beautiful sunsets in Florida during the summertime that are actually due to Saharan dust that's suspended in the air. And even in California, occasionally, they'll have the same kind of result, which is actually dust coming across from China.
Now, it's one thing to say that dust is going to have an effect on a hurricane, but when you break that down, it's got to be a real challenge to find out how much dust would have how much of an effect on a tropical system.
Exactly. And so that's really where probably one of the most challenging parts of this work is going to come to play, is trying to have a model that simulates the effect of this dust in the Saharan air layer on a tropical cyclone, either one that's already developed into a hurricane or one that's actually in the midst of the development stages. So observations, which we have done, can only go so far, and we really need to try and understand some of the dynamics and some of these the mechanisms and see how important they are, like you were saying.
So are these the first steps then toward perhaps having some computer models that might be able to incorporate the presence and the influence of dust?
Absolutely, and that's really what I hope this study generates, is interest in trying to model these effects so we can really get an understanding of why do we see the relationship we see. On the other end, too, we also don't really know exactly why dust activity changes from year to year. So another part of this study, too, or a follow-on, would be to try and understand how come one year we can see a huge dust storm every 3 days, but then in other years it just doesn't seem like anything happens at all.
So can there be enough dust to completely keep a hurricane from forming?
Certainly, that's what it looks like we've been seeing. And in fact, a colleague of mine, Jason Dunyon, at the National Hurricane Center, spent a lot of time last year looking at individual cases, as have I this year. And it really seems like you get a storm that starts to form off of West Africa, and you'll see a convection and you'll see some organization, and then what happens is one of these Saharan air layer actually overtakes the storm, and then it just becomes very sluggish, and in several cases just looks like it dissipates altogether.
Hurricane forecasters look at things like sea surface temperatures, upper winds, all these factors. Do you think there will be a point where we'll be considering dust as having as much of a role in hurricane formation as these other components?
I'm not sure how much of a role it's going to play, but I certainly think that my impression is that one day it will be something that we have to consider. And right now, even with some of the status reports that come from the National Hurricane, you can see at the very end, because there has been some interest in what's happening with dust, and you'll see at the very end of these reports, well, the Saharan air layer was doing this, or we noted a certain amount of dust activity off the coast of West Africa, but we're not really quite sure what to do with that information yet.
You've said that dust can prompt hurricanes to move further west, as I understand, and thereby threaten the United States. How does that happen? Why does that happen? What do we know?
Well, this is something that when we looked at our results, we noticed, aside from the fact that when we have dust activity, we have less hurricanes forming, less tropical cyclones forming in the North Atlantic, what we saw also was that of the storms that did form, they seemed to be shifted a little bit further towards the United States, towards the east coast of the U.S. And so this is something new that we're actually starting to look at with our satellite data again, is to try and see when you actually have this Saharan air layer out over the Atlantic Ocean, does that essentially kind of put a cap on these storms that could become hurricanes? And so instead of forming into a hurricane closer to Africa, more in the middle of the ocean, and in which case often they would end up recurving and maybe even being east of Bermuda, like we saw several times this year with these storms that seemingly come harmlessly curved out into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. What we think we're seeing is that when you actually have this dust layer over the Atlantic Ocean, that these storms don't really form, and they end up being essentially capped and just kind of shuffled along a little bit further west. And so then they're closer to the Caribbean when they actually emerge from the Saharan air layer, from all this dusty, warm air mass. And when they emerge, then they're emerging in a place where they are more likely to hit the United States. But again, this is something that we're currently right now just trying to understand.
If you want to be able to sample the level of dust in putting together some type of a prediction, obviously you don't have upper air over the Atlantic to do that with. You don't even have any sampling capability in the Saharan Desert. Are we just going to have to rely off satellite totally for what is seen in assessing what is perhaps there?
Well, there's definitely surface observations, and there, NASA runs a series that they're called sun photometers that are placed all over the world, several in Africa, the United States, the Caribbean.
So those are available to help you know?
Those are available. The problem is that they're at one point. The benefit of having a satellite is we can see the whole globe. And right now, with all the new satellites that are being developed and are being launched, it's probably more likely that currently and in the future, we're going to be able to do a fairly accurate job of assessing the amount of dust that is in the air based on how much sunlight it reflects.
What is your ultimate hope out of all of the research here that you've written, that you've done?
Well, ultimately, I would like to know what kind of role dust plays in modifying these year-to-year changes in hurricane activity, and to essentially be able to put together, not only to have a better understanding of what modulates these year-to-year changes, how come 2005 was such an intense year for hurricanes, whereas this year has been so much weaker, but also to be able to extrapolate that into the future and to take a certain set of observations and give ourselves some kind of idea of what we might need to be prepared for in the future.
So this is just one more little piece, perhaps, of the puzzle that you're able to put together.
Absolutely. Just one piece, and maybe a very important piece that we've been neglecting, but certainly there's a lot of unknowns, and so we need to be looking for answers wherever we can and find some new theories and then test them and see exactly how important they are.
The researchers say they don't know if Saharan dust storms affect hurricanes directly or whether both are just responding to some large-scale atmospheric changes taking place around the tropical Atlantic. I want to thank Mr. Evan for letting us talk with him. Yet again, just more that makes me appreciate the complexity of figuring out tropical cyclones.
I think it was an interesting point toward the end where the dust may be a result of this particular type upper air situation and not necessarily causing the depression of the hurricane formation. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, I think that this research, David, really brings up more questions than answers, and they're great questions, and I think the answers are out there, and they'll keep digging at it. But JB is right. You know, is the dust representing some type of upper air pattern that's preventing hurricanes from forming, or is it the dust? And I don't know if we know that yet, but we'll get there. It'll be the next generation.
Something that I'm looking forward to in the coming years that will affect hurricane forecasting and who knows what other fields within meteorology is the onset of the new generation of satellites. I hear researchers all across the board say they're looking forward to what that technology is going to bring to us and maybe allow us to understand some of this a little bit better. And we may have to pursue that as a subject in some future Weather Brains netcast, just kind of looking at what these new satellites may allow us to do.
That would make an excellent program.
They've come a long way, haven't they, from 10-20 years ago.
Yeah, today is an important anniversary too, David. 32 years ago today, the first GOES satellite was launched, and that really changed everything. In terms of the information we get, it's sort of the backbone of the monitoring and forecasting part of the National Weather Service, I think.
And Bill used to come out to the Weather Service at 11 West Oxmoor Road and steal some of those satellite photographs, those 10x10 black and white prints.
Yeah, they always wondered why that office building never had any trash on the weekends, because it all went in the back of my car.
I'll tell you a sad story. Back when I did television weather with David, we would drive down there and get those black and white satellite photographs and shoot them to show on television. And they would they would key those things behind me. It was either that, you know, if I drove down there at, say, 4 o'clock, I could get a satellite picture that was, 1 hour old, or I could use those network old movies, these black and white movies that were just awful, and typically they ended at, like, noon. So I would make that long drive down Valley Avenue from Red Mountain and get my black and white satellite picture, and that was pretty advanced back then.
Some... And the best thing was on Sundays when they threw away all those old DIFACS charts. You know, they'd clean off all the things on the wall and throw them away. And, boy, I loved poring over those old charts. That was so much fun.
Somewhere in a back shelf or drawer around my place is one of those old satellite pictures like James is talking about. On that, they came across on this wet kind of paper. Was it called DIFACS? Does that sound right? Anybody remember
that? That was the name of the service. Yeah, DIFACS.
Okay.
And you're right. That paper was wet. We used to have a machine. When I got to Dallas, I was big time, buddy, because I had my own DIFACS machine. Instead of having to go down to the weather service, we actually had one in the office.
So it came to you.
It came off that wet paper, and you'd hang it up on the wall, and that was big time back then.
And I guess television people all across the country, myself included at one point, would draw with a felt marker, a Marks-A-Lot pen, would draw the cold fronts and the highs and the lows in on this paper, and that would be shot with a camera. And
For television, you do it that way, and then if you were doing an analysis in the office, you'd use the little colored pencils, and we'd have a big old stack of those things in there. So you had the big magic markers for television and the little colored pencils for work. And, you know, I guess ours is the last generation of weather people that will know what that stuff looked like, because most of these young people, they've never seen that stuff before.
I still have in a closet a stack of something called 45 RPM records. Anybody ever heard of those in this day and age?
You can get something now to hook to your computer through the USB port. You can actually record off a phonograph.
USB turntables. James, I think you were pretty familiar with 45s, maybe in Tuscaloosa, WTBC, rocking and rolling.
The Big 1230, buddy, the Big 1230. A part of everything you do. Yeah, we were. I played rock and roll music on the radio for 5 years through high school and college, and I played vinyl records, and most young people have no idea. They might have an idea of what it is, but they've certainly never, used it for any practical purpose.
Well,
the worst part were the cue burns,
to cue the noise.
Things up. You have to go move the needle back and forth across the beginning of the record, and it scratched it all up. So after you do that for a time, it sounded like...
At the very first, it sure would. I probably still have some of those. Maybe we can play part of that on a Weather Brain sometime. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
The old cue burn, but pretty fun, cool. Well, it was state-of-the-art technology at one point. DJs with two turntables, so you could go straight from one song to the next and do a mix there and... Keep the beat going.
That's where I got my start doing the weather. I was working at that radio station during the super outbreak of April 3rd, 1974, and, stayed up into that, and ultimately I went north helping the hams, but that kind of stuff was my training ground for broadcasting. I'd play Led Zeppelin 1 minute, the Carpenters the next minute, and then do some weather after that.
My kind of radio.
Bill Murray, tell us about weathercalendars.com. Pretty cool website.
Yeah, thank you for the plug there. We had a lot of fun creating. As a matter of fact, I'm right now in the middle of writing the 2008 calendar. So it goes to the publisher December 1st. So I've been kind of playing with that for a few weeks now and getting it in shape. But 2007 calendar will be out there shortly.
Now, these are very nice engagement calendars. People may not understand what you've got here. I mean, these are classy, nice desktop calendars. They're really almost a coffee table type book. They've got fabulous information in them. So
it's all the collection of useless weather trivia that weather nerds like us find interesting. Okay. All in one volume.
A weather geek's paradise.
Exactly.
And it's weathercalendars.com.
That's correct.
All right. Very good.
I got to go back and watch it rain. I'm going to go back and stare out the window for a while. This is exciting.
Watch the rain counters just tick away.
Yeah, we're at 4,700 here in Trustful, so it's coming down.
Very good. A reminder that the opinions expressed here on Weather Brains are strictly those of the speaker, not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us here at Weather Brains, our telephone number, if you'd like to leave a voicemail, is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. If you'd like to email us, our address is question@weatherbrains.com.
Am I the only geek that has to go outside to measure the rain?
You don't have one of those indoor, outdoor, remote monitoring weather station thingamabobs?
Negative.
You need
to get
one. I've
got that old-fashioned weather service 8-inch copper rain gauge that holds 20 inches.
Well, wow. You'd probably enjoy the convenience. James Price, the Pinson Weather Observer, goes outside, right?
No, yeah, that's what he is, too.
No automated stuff for him either. But the indoor stuff is nice because you don't get wet.
That's true. Well, I like to get wet.
Go get wet. Just don't get Miss Molly too wet, or she'll get upset.
I'm going to take her out in just a minute and get us both wet.
Fair enough. For J.B. Elliott and Miss Molly, who's probably around there somewhere, along with James Spann and Bill Murray, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening and hope you'll be able to join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Adios. Guys, thanks. That was fun.
Good night.
Thank you, guys.
That was good.
Y'all be
great.
Good
interview.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.